Support for the South Carolina Lead is made possible in part by AARP. The coronavirus continues to affect us all, keeping us apart, but we don't have to be alone. AARP is here in South Carolina, providing information that can help you and your family. Click to connect at aarp.org/sc.
Hello, welcome to the South Carolina Lead. You trust the Lead to keep you up to date on important state news, and we've been doing that more often as our state faces the COVID-19 virus. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on May 13th, 2020, from my home studio in Columbia. And just so you know, some of this information in the podcast may have changed by the time you've heard it. This podcast cuts through the noise and gives you South Carolina-specific COVID-19 news and stories. This episode features a lot. We got a lot in this episode. The latest COVID-19 data, a deeper look at guidelines for reopening businesses. Lawmakers were back for a day, so we recap the legislative action that will keep the state funded and expand absentee voting, an issue we heard debated in the state Supreme Court. That's right, we take you into the courtroom. Well, virtually, that is. Also, a fringe look at contact tracing, what Dr. Anthony Fauci thinks of the steps South Carolina has taken, COVID-19 etiquette, and much, much more. Additionally, we want to hear your stories, so we set up a voicemail box to hear from y'all about your daily life in these uncertain times. Leave us a one-minute-long voicemail at 803-563-7169. That's 803-563-7169. And now for the latest in South Carolina. Currently, the spread of COVID-19 is ongoing, but cases are plateauing, according to Department of Health and Environmental Control officials. There have been 362 deaths. And currently there are 8,030 cases being reported in all 46 counties as of May 13th at 4 p.m. Okay, folks, we got a lot of politics, so much so that it's very meaty. We might as well be a butcher shop, and you're going to get some meat sweats because it's a thick section. And that's because we were back in session. The State House was back on Tuesday for the full day, and they accomplished a lot, which we'll get to. But first, we're going to start in Washington. Dr. Anthony Fauci took to Capitol Hill virtually on Tuesday to testify before a Senate committee and warned against reopening states too quickly.
There is a real risk that you will trigger an outbreak that you may not be able to control, which in fact, paradoxically, will set you back, not only leading to some suffering and death that could be avoided, but could even set you back on the road to trying to get economic recovery, because it would almost turn the clock back rather than going forward. That is my major concern, Senator.
That soundbite got a lot of play. But one that garnered headlines in South Carolina came after Senator Tim Scott told Fauci about the state's approach to fighting the disease while gradually reopening. Scott cited better hospital capacity, working to isolate hotspots, plateauing cases, ramping up testing, especially in at-risk populations, and increased contact tracing. Here's Scott and Fauci.
My question, Dr. Fauci, is as we start the process of moving towards reopening South Carolina, what else would you suggest that we could do to protect our most vulnerable populations?
You gave a really very eloquent description of what I think would be a model way, the way you've approached this. I mean, you have put things in place that I think would optimize your capability of reopening. And as I was thinking as you were speaking, I'd almost want to clone that and make sure other people hear about that and see what you've been doing. The issue of your direct question to me about the vulnerable populations is that, as we have said in our guidelines, and it looks like you are ready to progress carefully because you put into place a very good system, that the vulnerables, the elderly and those with underlying conditions, should be those who at the very last lifting of mitigations should be those who are left in a situation where they might be in danger of getting infected. In other words, protect them right up until the very end of the relaxation of your mitigation.
That vote of confidence even led the DHEC Twitter account to pat itself on the back by quote-tweeting the Post and Courier article about Fauci praising the state. While the validation is a testament to a lot of hard work in the state, Dr. Linda Bell, the state epidemiologist, told a Richland County ad hoc committee on the coronavirus that she's alarmed by the lack of mask wearing and critical social distancing that got the state to and kept the outbreak at a manageable level. The state newspaper quoted Bell saying, quote, "I don't want people to lose sight of the prevention measures. I'm rather alarmed by the fact that as I try and restrict my activities in public when I go out, I would say that 10% of people in the businesses and stores when I have been out this past weekend had on masks," quote. Again, people hold the key in making this all work. Meanwhile, contact tracing has become the latest concern of government overreach, something a fringe group of lawmakers expressed concern about on the floor of the South Carolina House and Senate on Tuesday during debate over the continuing resolution, the funding measure that will keep the state funded at current levels next fiscal year, which begins July 1st. The continuing resolution has money for DHEC and its growing list of contact tracers. Here's an exchange that summarizes the overall feeling. It starts with Greenville Republican James Burns questioning Budget Chairman Merle Smith on the House floor.
And so I guess the bottom line is, if Mr. Representative Magnuson here had COVID-19 and they traced all of us, 123 of us were in contact with him, and they put us and they came knocked on our door, what are they going to do?
They're going to ask you if you were with Mr. Magnuson. They're then going to ask you if you ask you to probably get tested and then see the results of that test. This is not China. No one's coming to kick in your door and drag you out and put you in a cell and do anything to that effect. They have no, there's no authority to do that. And I know that's what worries people, is you saw what happened in China where they were coming in and just strong-arming people. And I don't think that's what's happened, because we have a constitutional right in this state. We don't have to cooperate. There is no law that says you have to cooperate. And so if somebody knocks on my door and I tell them to pound sand, then I think that's, they got to pound sand and say thank you very much and go on about their business.
So what I'm hearing you say is nobody's going to come to us and say you are forced to quarantine for 14 days.
No, sir. If you read this proviso, that they request that you quarantine. And if you can't, if you're in a house that has a number of individuals and you can't quarantine yourself, then obviously you can, then we will make quarantines available at your choice.
So now this was a very isolated concern to an isolated group of Republican lawmakers. And despite the concerns of this emerging police state of contact tracers who merely work to identify outbreaks and notify those who may have encountered an infected person, something DHEC was doing way before this pandemic for other infectious diseases, some couple these concerns with the governor's emergency declaration that's basically on auto-renew, now for a fifth two-week provision. As for the continuing resolution itself, Chairman Smith told me there will be furloughs in higher education likely, but budget cuts aren't expected at this time.
At this point, we're still ahead of our projections, or still ahead of the revenue here. We have increased revenue from last fiscal year. It's still being predicted by the Board of Economic Advisors. And as you may know, they took the worst case scenario of South Carolina being shut down for 3 months. And so we still see a positive growth in our budget. And as long as we have some minimal to positive growth in the budget, then we should not have to endure those budget cuts and furloughing state employees, but we just, it's all up to how this economy recovers. And that's the ultimate question, is how quickly are we going to recover? And all indications are South Carolina is prepared for a quick ascent into recovering and this economy recovering, and we hope that proves correct.
But to bury the lead for you, okay, calm down. I know we haven't buried the lead in a while, but we got some news here. AT, give me an order here.
Order!
Thank you. The biggest news of the day was the surprising moves to deal with primary election voting concerns. House and Senate lawmakers unanimously passed legislation to allow voters to request mail-in absentee ballots due to the governor's COVID-19 emergency declaration. The governor signed the bill Wednesday, as expected, and this will provide essentially a 19th reason for voters to request an absentee ballot, either in person or mail. The passage of the bill came just hours after the state Supreme Court heard arguments for and against whether the absentee voting excuse dealing with being physically disabled includes the fear of contracting and/or spreading COVID-19, especially among high-risk groups. So now, we'll take you somewhere we've never gone before, into the courtroom of the state Supreme Court, so you can get a sense of the debate. and by courtroom, it was a WebEx call, so there were some glitches here and there, but still very interesting debate, nevertheless, about voting rights in this day of COVID-19. Bruce Spiva argued on behalf of the Democratic candidates and groups in the suit that having fair and open elections is not possible during this pandemic.
The text of the definition does not provide that a voter must themselves be sick. Instead, it provides that a person may vote absentee if they cannot be at their polling place, quote, because of injury or illness, end quote. South Carolina voters who cannot go to the polls because they are attempting to avoid contracting or unwittingly spreading COVID-19 squarely fit within that definition. COVID-19 is an illness, and it is the reason they cannot be at their polling place on election day.
Here's Associate Justice George James.
Your position, as you just stated just a few minutes ago, is that it clearly physically disabled person clearly means pretty much any registered voter in the state of South Carolina. Is that correct?
Under the definition provided by the General Assembly and under the conditions that we are in, yes, it is correct, Your Honor, that any individual who is practicing social distancing would fit that definition. So in these circumstances, Your Honor, it wouldn't be for all times.
This hearing was done remotely for the first time with the five justices on a WebEx call from their offices instead of the bench. Associate Justice John Cannon Few, who is now sporting a new beard, asked Spiva from his office facing the statehouse across the street if this was something lawmakers should be deciding instead, which they did hours later. Cannon Few references a letter from State Election Commission Director Marcy Andino.
Back to Director Andino's letter, I mean, she basically disagrees with what you say the statute says, which is not dispositive, of course, at all. But her letter asks the General Assembly to change the law. And if under that circumstance, the legislature were to say, no, we're not going to change the law, then that would in and of itself be a legislative determination of what the state's policy is and how the absentee voting process should be carried out under that policy. Why under that circumstance should we weigh in?
I guess I have three quick responses, Your Honor. One, Director Andino also sent a different letter to the AG in which she suggested that she thought that our reading of the current statute might be correct because she asked for an opinion on that. And the second response, Your Honor, is that the letter that she wrote to the legislature, to the General Assembly and to the governor asked for many changes, things that really truly would be a change, to the statute that go well beyond what we're asking for here in terms of additional early voting, changes to when they can count the absentee ballots and the like. And so I don't think the fact that she asked for a change in the law doesn't necessarily reflect only on this issue, Your Honor, if at all. And third, the General Assembly can, of course, always change the law, but we're asking this court to interpret the existing law. And so if the General Assembly disagrees with this court's interpretation of existing law, it can, of course, change the law consistent with constitutional principles.
Chief Justice Donald Beatty referenced multiple times the friend of the court brief filed by Republican Attorney General Alan Wilson, which suggested diagnoses and risks related to COVID-19 should suffice for obtaining an absentee ballot, something that Grayson Lambert, lawyer for the South Carolina State Election Commission, supported.
That your position then is in line with what the Attorney General's, that is, that anyone who's at high risk of contracting the virus or having some detrimental impact as a result of having contacted someone with the virus would be eligible for an absentee ballot.
I think that's right, Your Honor. Yes, sir. I think the Attorney General and the Election Commission agree in that interpretation.
Lawyer Rob Tyson, representing the South Carolina Republican Party, argued against expanding the definition of disability when it comes to voting absentee, though the intent of the absentee voting law and the 18 reasons to vote absentee are said to be interpreted liberally. He saw it as a Democratic push to rewrite voting laws.
The Democratic Party, the National Democratic Party, has undertaken a concerted and a coordinated effort across the U.S. to use court systems to change election laws. We respectfully request that the court deny their attempt to rewrite South Carolina laws.
Keith, may I jump in here?
You may.
That's Associate Justice George James asking Chief Justice Beatty to start questioning.
Mr. Tyson, what is wrong with a coordinated strategy? Isn't that what organization is all about? If in the Democratic Party's eyes, it is seeking to get to a result that is supported by the law.
Yeah, I think that's right, Your Honor. I mean, they've got a purpose, and we appreciate that purpose. I understand that purpose.
The National Republican Party has a purpose and a coordinated strategy about many things.
Yes, sir. I understand completely. But to try to use the pandemic as an excuse to justify why these rules need to be changed, we believe is an inappropriate effort.
Well, the ball we have to keep our eye on in this case is the construction of the term physically disabled person. Is that correct?
That is correct.
All right. That's all I have, Chief. Thank you.
The court will rule as soon as possible, and two similar suits will be heard in federal court this week. Yeah, I told you this was going to be a long section. We're almost done here, folks, but I want to tell you what happened in the statehouse now. Across the street in the statehouse, lawmakers provided a surprisingly quick resolution to the pending June 9th primary problem, which now gives officials and voters more time without having to wait for the Supreme Court decision. Though, if the court agrees to expand the definition of physically disabled, it would also apply to the November general election, whereas the measure that the lawmakers approved and the governor signed will expire July 1st. So, statehouse short-term, Supreme Court long-term. However, several lawmakers said they expect future debate to expand absentee voting for the general election, likely when they reconvene for 2 weeks on September 15th. Now, on top of all of this, there is an additional $15 million in the continuing resolution to safeguard the elections during a time which several poll managers have said they won't be working, and some poll location owners are weary of hosting people. The State Election Commission is providing PPE and training for workers and sanitation protocols for equipment. And with a large influx of absentee ballots coming in by mail already being seen, lawmakers also approved legislation to give local election officials a full day before primary day to open and begin counting absentee ballots. That was long. I told you got the meat sweats from that one. Told you. And that was even all of it. So just so you know, we're going to have a little bit more about what other bills got passed on Saturday's podcast. And they were probably already have been signed into law at that point, too. So we'll have more to talk about in Saturday's podcast about what happened in the State House this week. Okay, let's get into some business news, and I promise this one's a nice quick one. Ted Pitts, president and CEO of the South Carolina Chamber of Commerce, rolled out a comprehensive relief and recovery plan for businesses on Tuesday, dealing with workplace safety, recovery and relief, and workforce and education issues. Now, workplace safety is a concern with 40% of businesses, according to a recent chamber survey, saying that these businesses are having a hard time obtaining the needed PPE.
If you're a large manufacturer, you have relationships and contracts and you can get PPE. But if you're a small business and have never needed it in your place or your establishment, you may not be able to get PPE. So that's an issue that we think the state can help kind of facilitate. And Secretary Hitz talked about having kind of a central warehouse. But that's an important thing that businesses tell us they need, whether it's hand sanitizer or mask or gloves. That sort of equipment that they need to open and be safe is something that they need.
Pitts even said there could be some sort of system where if businesses meet certain standards, maybe they receive a compliance sticker or some sort of identifier. I asked him if there could be something similar to DHEC's grading stickers given to restaurants.
So I don't think it's necessarily a grading system like the restaurants have where there's actually a physical inspection and it's done periodically. But I do think there is a way that, we obviously haven't fully vetted this with DHEC, but there may be a way for DHEC to look at if you follow these guidelines and you can check all the boxes, then, you know, as a manufacturer, you're a safe work environment. As a retailer, you're a safe work environment. Those requirements would be different depending on the type of establishment. But I do think there is a way that you can help businesses show their customers, hey, we're doing everything that we can. And you know, a lot of this where we are right now is based on psyche. You know, people watch the news and, you know, they're questioning as to whether they're at risk or not at risk. What do they need to do? You know, I think this will just help provide some sense of relief for customers and employees that, hey, my employer or this business is doing, they're following the guidelines. They're doing everything that they've been asked to do.
Now, while we didn't see action taken on bills this week related specifically to Accelerate SC's recommendations, such as limiting liability for businesses dealing with COVID-19, e-notary, or business license reform, Pitt says that doesn't mean lawmakers still can't take up such legislation in the off-season, especially since the sign-e-die resolution that they passed on Tuesday will allow them to.
And I feel confident in my conversations with leadership that though there are some who say we're not coming back till the fall, that I think the business community and the general population in South Carolina is not going to sit back all summer and not have some of these things implemented. So I really think the General Assembly's not going to have a choice, and I think they're going to choose to come back. And again, in my conversations with leadership, they know some of these things need to be addressed. And, you know, I'm fully confident that they're going to step up and bring policymakers back to Columbia so they can implement some of these measures.
Translation, is the session really over this year? No, it's not. We don't know when it's going to end, actually. Stay tuned. So maybe you're out and about more, maybe you're back to work, or maybe nothing has changed for you and you're still self-isolating. You do you, girl. Sir. Ma'am. Regardless of what you do in this new normal, manners still exist. Personal space issues have always been a thing, but now they're a bit more life or death. So how do we navigate this without losing our cool? Well, I caught up with Cynthia Grosso, who runs the Charleston School of Protocol and Etiquette in the fourth friendliest city in the country, to explain. I caught up with Cynthia on Zencastr. It's a web-based program like Zoom, but for audio. I asked her about protocol for Zoom meetings, since now they're taking place from homes more often, and she said be aware of your backgrounds, sounds, lighting, and distractions, and add that everyone should be more understanding of everyone's situation these days. But what about when we greet each other in public nowadays? What then?
I think that right now, you know, warming up very quickly with a nice smile, warm greeting, and again, verbal hugs, encouraging words, and pleasantries that you speak verbally. And people understand it. You know, it's kind of like you kind of look at someone and smile, and we both know that right now we're not shaking hands. Now, if that will continue into the future, a lot of people are saying that that will continue. I'm not in favor of that, and there's a lot of reasons for that. There's a lot of neuroreceptors that we have in the palm of our hands. You know, they send positive chemicals to the brain like dopamine and oxytocin. And so all of these feel good chemicals. So when people say we give up the handshake for good or that's a thing of the past, I don't know if they really understand all what goes into a handshake.
We had a caller the other day who said she was ridiculed by some people at a store since she was wearing a mask. What's the proper way to handle a situation like that?
Right. I think that the wearing of masks is a personal preference and a personal decision. And if someone is wearing a mask, you know, etiquette doesn't say what's right and what's wrong. You know, it doesn't say you're right to wear a mask or you're right not to wear a mask. Etiquette never does that. What etiquette does is it tries to respect the rights of both people. So if somebody wants to wear a mask, then we respect that. If somebody doesn't want to wear a mask, we respect that decision as well. And there, you know, that decision can be things that we, you know, if someone's not wearing a mask and we feel they should be, then we, you know, make sure we keep our distance. But it's not going to be condemning someone for wearing a mask or even condemning someone for not wearing a mask. In other words, some places you have to wear a mask. You know, they're saying signs to enter the store, you have to wear a mask. Okay, that's fine. Then we respect the rules and we follow those guidelines.
So really it comes down to respect and tolerance.
Right. You know, here's the thing about confrontation, things like this. If you confront somebody and don't have a relationship with that person, you can only speak into people when you really have a relationship and you have that ability to do that. And so it's not, you know, it's not something you really want to get involved with, because in that moment you're not going to win that argument. And who knows how it will escalate or how that will wind up. But again, that doesn't mean you can't learn from it and teach from it, but you teach the people that you can speak into, because you have a relationship with them. So that's very important. Yeah, it probably would save a lot of arguments too.
And like Cynthia said, some people are never going to be convinced, which if you de-escalate can lead to a good sight.
Sometimes I say the best part of someone is the back of their head as they're walking away from you.
As for people sitting or standing too close to you or not moving on a sidewalk, Cynthia says be cordial, not confrontational. Make light of the situation without condemning people, which is as simple as saying, ah, the world we live in, instead of back up. Everyone is still adapting to all of this.
I mean, there are always people that are not going to care and are oblivious. And some people just really don't realize it. If somebody said that to me, you know, you're standing too close, I go, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. You're right, I forgot. So, I don't think people sometimes really intentionally do it. I think they just don't even think.
A little R-E-S-P-E-C-T during this time of COVID-19 goes a long way, folks. Now, this is our wind down section where we want to hear from you. Tell us what's going on in your world. Are you still going to work? Are you laid off? Are you in the medical profession? Are you a restaurant owner or have you gone to a restaurant recently? Are you a hairstylist who's excited that you're going to be opening on Monday? A gym owner? Someone who likes going to the gym? I like the gym. I don't know if I'm going to go back. Maybe I'll go. I don't know. Tell me what you're going to do. We want to know. People want to know these things. Tell us at 803-563-7169. I got a little carried away there. This is our new normal. We want to know what's going on. There's no judgment here. 803-563-7169. You might just get on the pod. You'll get on the pod. Believe me. Okay, AT, do we have any messages?
We do. We have a, you're asking for people in the medical profession. We have one right here. You ready?
Yep. Let's go.
Hi, my name is Christina and I live in Lexington. I'm a medical professional, but I am only going to work and to the grocery store when I need to. I have to wear a mask at home around my family when I get too close, which I don't hug. And I don't plan on doing anything outside of work and grocery stores for at least probably a year. And I'm shocked to see people not wear protection. So, no, just regular TV and home stuff. That's it. Thanks. Bye.
Well, respect to you, Christina, and thanks again for working on the front lines and giving us your glimpse into your daily life. It sounds challenging, but we thank you for your hard work and the sacrifices you're making. And if you want to honor healthcare workers like Christina, wear a mask like Christina, and as the CDC recommends. Easy, small little step right there if you want to honor people who are fighting on the front lines.
That's a double whammy right there. That's good.
It's a win-win, as they say in politics, as I've been told. It's a win-win.
Two birds, one stone, you know?
Yeah, I mean, any other mannerisms that we can come up with on the fly here? Synergy. It's basically a synergy.
One in the hands, two in the bush? I don't know what that one means.
It means, I'm not going to go into it right now.
Okay, thank you so much.
What have you been up to, AT?
Me? I've had a very strange day today where...
That's great. Okay, well, I'll tell you what I've been...
I showered in the morning.
Okay.
It's very weird. I haven't done that in a long time. My like routine has been all messed up. I'm showering at like 4:30 in the afternoons. It's been super weird. I feel like a regular person today. And like I didn't wear like sweatpants or anything. I put actual clothes on. So this is a first for like a long time for
Can I pry a little bit and ask you what the occasion is for this new routine and these clothes?
What's the occasion? There is no occasion. I just thought that I've been being such a dirtbag and a piece of garbage that I should really clean up my act.
I like that your trash dash is still there. I'm glad the trash dash didn't go anywhere.
The quarantine crust is not going anywhere. Don't worry.
I was you heard that interview with Merle Smith, and before we started, I was wearing a mask at the State House, and he's like, you still got that cheese grater on your face?
This is what we were talking about. We need clear masks.
And yeah, because then I actually lifted up. The only time I took my mask off on Tuesday, I lifted up to show him. He's like, Jesus, that's not made for TV. Because he saw it on This Week in South Carolina. And I said, you know, I've had this. This is my baby now. It's getting me through.
That's prime time facial hair. Let's be real.
It is prime time facial hair. The people have
responded. What's up with you? What's up with you besides that cheese grater?
I have, you know, like I watched that show Into the Night on Netflix, which I recommend. So now I'm on the hunt for something else. So I started watching a cooking show called Nadia's Time to Eat. It's on Netflix.
I've seen the BBC show. Promo for that.
Yeah, yeah, it was a BBC show, and she has quick and simple recipes for people with busy home lives. I mean, I'm not juggling kids or family, but I still don't want to spend too much more time in the kitchen if I don't need to.
Your plants are a lot, though.
Oh, my plants. I mean, they can hear you. They're fine. They're fine. Everyone's fine.
Up.
They're a lot to deal with. They're a lot to deal with.
What did you learn to make?
Well, she had a great egg wrap that I'm going to make into like a regular thing. And then her chicken shawarma was really like simple, in my opinion, because I realized that it had all the same seasonings that she was talking about. So I'm like, oh, I can make all this. Boom. So I'm going to do that soon once I, you know, I think I have to wean myself off the Instapot a little bit, but I love the Instapot. I can't get over it.
It's good.
So this is good because, you know, I bought 10 pounds of onions and 5 pounds of limes and 4 dozen eggs and 2.5 pounds of spinach at Costco. I mean, I love it. I've been going through
10
the onions.
10 pounds of onions.
10 pounds.
10 pounds of onions is the wrong amount.
They're going, though. They're going. Salsa.
Flying through them.
Sautéing.
Pound a day.
I'm sautéing every day. And I mean, half the limes went when I made margaritas last weekend. So it's very cost effective the way I live.
I'm going a pound of limes, pound of onions a day. Eating them both like apples, skin and all.
Don't judge my life. It works. But let us know what you're making if you buy your food in bulk as well, and what recipes and kitchen hacks that you have, or what shows you're watching at 803-563-7169. We want to know what's going on with you. So again, thanks for listening to our little chit chat there at the end. We always just want to do that as a little nice little distraction, get your mind off of things if you have craziness going on in your world, as we all do. And we want to thank you again for tuning into the pod. You can keep up with the latest news on SCETV.org and SouthCarolinaPublicRadio.org. And don't forget to support your local newspapers. And once you get your fill of the news, what do you got to do? You got to take a break from it. So go for a walk, saute some onions, do some yoga, whatever you can do. You can also follow me on Twitter at Gavin Jackson for the latest news and updates. And I'll also let you know if the governor is holding a press conference that day, which is always carried on SCETV and South Carolina Public Radio platforms, usually around 4:30 p.m. We're here for you, our lead community, throughout this week, and as this situation continues to develop, we're in full-scale hashtag lead laugh love mode together. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina. Oh, yeah. Crack into a Slim Jim, South Carolina.
Meat. We are meat purveyors. Call us a butcher.